Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you're listening to Total EM. This is podcast number 27, and we are back with Min Lekong to finish out the podcast that we talked about 2 weeks ago now, where we had Min Lekong on for a primer about the C-collar debate. And so we now have him back on to talk a little more detail about C-collars, the pros and cons of both the semi-rigid and the soft cervical collars that are now being used more in Australia and in certain other parts of the globe as well. With that debate, we're also going to talk about some of the other finer points. There are going to be a lot of notes and links in the show notes, so make sure to check that out too. But otherwise, let's go ahead and let's get started with this podcast. Now, I would like to bring up, you actually told me about this, but that there is a, I can't remember if you said it was a ground or air service that actually keeps hard collars still for one potential benefit, and that was with certain types of facial fractures.
Yes. So the Queensland Ambulance Service have a specialised paramedic response unit called the HART or something like that. Anyway, but basically, I apologise if I can't remember the name, but basically it's a critical care paramedic unit in Brisbane, which is the capital city of the state. And they respond, they essentially do, a specialized response out to traumas, significant events. And they provide critical care paramedics who are trained to do things like RSI and give blood and do ultrasound and all this kind of stuff. And one of them commented when we're having this discussion on Twitter that they still keep the hard collars for splinting bad facial fractures. And I think, that's obviously a reasonable role if they find it useful that you can splint a broken face with a collar that lifts your jaw up and holds it in a certain position. I don't have any issue with that. That's not the discussion here, though. But I think that's just using the hard collar for a purpose that it was never really intended to. But that's fine. We do that all the time in pre-hospital. I think in my service, we just got rid of them all completely, but I guess it's something that we need to consider that, you know, if we do have someone with a bad broken face, how we splint them. And I certainly know as part of their SOP, Sydney HEMS use the hard cervical collar as a splint for a broken face. So I think that there are at least two services. And I think on Twitter, there was a bit of discussion from other helicopter services from the UK and, you know, other places where they do a very similar thing. So I think that we're not trying to say that, you know, the hard collar is completely useless. It's just in the role that it was mainly taught and intended to, you really need to, well, certainly in my experience and the Queensland Ambulance and anyone in Queensland who's working in pre-hospital trauma, you can ask any of them. The experience has been a very positive one, the change from a hard to a soft collar. I saw some email traffic a few months ago about one of my colleagues in one of the other services that does aeromedical here. They're going to do an audit of spinal injuries throughout the whole state since the introduction of the soft collar and audit if there's been any concerns, issues, any missed cases where harm has occurred as a result of using a soft collar, and that publication will come out soon. So I think hopefully that'll inform others around the world. But personally, my view, my goal, my aspiration for every pre-hospital service out there or anyone looking after trauma would be to this year seriously consider what role you see the hard collar has. Because, you know, in the last couple of years, well, in the last year and a half, you know, a lot of international organisations have come out to actually say, the cervical collar has no good evidence base. ILCOR came out with their last revision of their guidelines where they said the cervical collar has probably no role. I think their words were basically that the first responder shouldn't be using a hard cervical collar. In the literature that they provide, they just basically say there's really no good evidence it does anything of benefit. So ILCOR came out with that. And then there was another organisation, I'm trying to remember that also said something. So the Australian Life Saving Association similarly produced a similar statement saying we now know not, we've reviewed the evidence because of ILCOR reviewed the evidence and now we say that there's no evidence and that we don't recommend using it anymore as an association. The National Rugby League of Australia has now removed the use of hard collars from their protocols. So a number of not just medical but kind of paramedical and sporting associations have just actually gotten rid of it, have stopped using it. The Ski Patrol Association of Australia. Now, Australia doesn't have a big ski field. You know, it's basically centered around – well, yeah, you might laugh, but that's just the way it is. You know, it basically, yeah, ski fields are in New South Wales and Victoria. None of the states have it. So the Ski Patrol Association is really just dealing with New South Wales and Victoria. But they also changed their protocols as a result of ILCOR. They basically said we no longer recommend the use of hard collars as a first responder spinal care aspect. And that's basically because ILCOR influenced the Australian Resuscitation Council. You can go to the Australian Resuscitation Council website. It's freely available. No subscriptions are needed. And you can look at their recommendations, and they basically went in line with ILCOR. So ATLS, in my view, need to really consider this, given that a number of other organisations have moved away from current and previous ATLS teaching. And why ATLS continues to teach that, I would say, is a big question mark. I would query that. I would say why, as a former ATLS instructor, I really think that we're not doing a disservice, I guess, to not only providers but also future trauma patients if we continue to have this approach where we are doing something that is not only lacks an evidence base but also is harmful. And I think, you know, we can all think in our backs of minds when we put on hard collars where we've actually caused people harm. We've hurt people. I know I have, where, you know, someone with a clavicle fracture, you put on the collar and it hurts them. Why? Because it's pushing on their fracture. You know, we did that. I no longer do it because I use a soft collar, but we did that. And for those of you who still do that because you are more afraid of somehow, you know, paralyzing a patient with a potential cervical spine injury. That you're more afraid of that than actually causing pain to a patient with an obvious clavicle fracture. Now, you can argue the toss, what are the ethics of that? And, you know, of course you can give pain relief and put the collar on and whatever. But I would say, why do that if the benefit is uncertain, if not doubtful? So I think that I would just say that my own observation, looking at the broad literature as well as both paramedical, sporting, as well as medical organisations, that the tide is turning for the hard collar. And this year, I think more and more, I would ask people to consider the role of it.
So we talked about the pros and cons of the hard collar, and we've talked a lot about the pros of a soft collar, just mentioning a few more there. Besides, all I can think of is cost. Can you think of anything else that would be a considered potential con for soft collars?
Yeah, sure. Look, there's a number, and I think that's why in Queensland, you know, there's going to be an audit of the use to consider that, because the obviously critics from other states are looking at us and saying, you know, the risk you run is that you'll cause problems, harms, and so forth. And the obvious one is that you put on a soft collar, the person has a cervical fracture and something bad happens. Now, I know of a number of cases where that's actually happened, in that we put on a soft collar with either a highly suspicious cervical fracture or someone with a known, like proven on imaging, cervical spine fracture. And this might be hard for some people to understand. In Queensland, the spinal service advocated for that, even with a known cervical spine fracture, that you can use the soft collar, okay? And you don't use the hard collar. Now, there's other collars. The thing you haven't mentioned is there are other collars and other use, things like the Philadelphia, the Aspen. Yeah, they're still used. And it's up to the department whether they want to use that. But it was the Queensland Ambulance Service who got rid of the hard collars and just used the soft collar. They don't use a Philadelphia, they don't use an Aspen, they just use the soft collar. And that's for both known and highly suspected cervical spine fractures. Okay. Hard collar still exists and it still is used on selected cases, but it's not an empiric thing. The soft collar, so yes, I have had cases where we've had, you know, someone with neck pain and so forth, and it was pretty highly suspicious that we had one. And we put the soft collar on, And look, I haven't had anyone have any bad outcomes at all, but we'll wait for the audit to see if if we've had a case where a soft collar was put on and someone had a progression of neurological deficit. I'm not aware of any, but we'll wait to see what the audit says. That's probably the biggest con, is the risk, the fear that you are going to allow a cervical spine injury to worsen. Now, that's not based really on evidence, that's just fear, and there's really no evidence that the hard collar would have done any better, to be frankly honest with you. So it's a little bit of an irrational type fear, but that's the fear. The other things would be, in terms of the cervical collar, would be that some people have argued, one of my emergency colleagues down in Melbourne, who actually is against the soft collar, his argument would be, well, why don't you just not have no collar? Why have a soft collar? Because the soft collar gives you this false impression that you're trying to immobilize it when you're actually not. So that's another con, is that this false sense of security. And to be honest, I don't understand that viewpoint in that, you know, why don't you just have nothing? I'll tell you why not have nothing. I think that the value of having a support around your neck does a couple of things that I've found, and certainly is on the Queensland Health Ambulance website about the use of soft collars. And like I said, their protocol for soft collars is freely available on their website, so anyone can have a look at it. So basically, the value of having some support around your neck is that it reminds the person, it's a reminder both to providers as well as the person, that the C-spine is not absolutely cleared. So it's a reminder. It's a visual and tactile reminder, and it's comfortable. And so I find that it just helps the person. It does kind of like what the hard collar did in terms of reminding people, yep, your neck could be hurt and it needs to be supported and you need to stay still. But it does it in a way that doesn't cause pain. It doesn't make them agitated. They don't feel like that it's kind of restraining them and so forth. So that's why I'd say I'd still think it's valuable. But that's one criticism, is that it gives you a false sense of security. That'd be probably the two major cons, I'd say, with the soft collar.
So I'm glad you brought this up, because this is something I was going to mention too, is that some people may say, well, you're saying that there's really no good evidence for why a hard collar works, and also that the soft collar may not do anything in addition to, it may just be the same, it may possibly even have a higher risk of worsening outcomes, although, like you said, we have to wait for more data to see if that's truly the case. But I think some people out there are going to say that, what do we do based on the patient's mental status? So for someone who is alert and conscious and they kind of follow commands that are appropriate, okay, soft collar seems pretty reasonable. Like you said, it's more of a reminder. Then you have the people who may be more combative, say your drunk person who fell and they're thrashing around and everything else. Well, do you still put them in the soft collar, and do you try and calm them down with medications or other methods to try and get them so that they will wear the collar? And then I guess the third category is the entire, the unconscious, more or less comatose patient who is probably not going to be moving on you. Are you going to put them in a soft collar? Are you going to put them in some other means of C-spine precautions?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think I talked about it with Stephen Rashford, who's the medical director of the Queensland Ambulance Service, on a podcast of mine a few months ago. But basically, if you can't clear the C-spine after an injured trauma patient, they all get the soft collar. Okay, so that's a pretty blanket thing. Can't clear the C-spine. So basically, put it on in the same situation you would with a hard collar. Okay, you can't clear the C-spine regardless of their mental state, whatever. If you can clear the C-spine, they don't get a collar at all, regardless whether it's hard or soft. So if they're alert, talking to you, no pain, walking around, moving their neck fine, no tenderness of their neck, no collar. Okay, they got some neck pain, regardless of their, their conscious level, then as a general rule, putting the soft collar on is this kind of the default approach, because you can't clear the C-spot. It's a visual reminder of that, it's a tactile reminder of that. And to be frankly honest, it is highly more tolerated than the hard collar. So you're talking about the drunk patient who you put on, you can't clear the C-spine because their mental status is altered. The soft collar is by far the superior option. than the hard collar, because we all know what happened when we put the hard collar on drunk people. I've seen it so many times, and I'm sure you have. You know, they might tolerate it for a little while because, you know, they've seen it in the movies and they think it's what needs to be done. But in the end, it hurts. They might feel, you know, restricted, and they want it off. And then you're kind of in this dilemma. Well, do you force the issue? Do you say, well, no, I know better than you. You need to leave it on. And then you go into this spiral where, as you and I have seen, and we know, you know, people have been sedated, they've been restrained, they've been, you know, yelled at, they've been abused to say, you need to leave it on. And I have seen other people, you know, abusing patients, basically saying, you know, leave it on or you're going to be paralyzed, when they want it off because it hurts them. You know, that's really, I don't know if that's, I would consider that best care. I think that, see, like I said, in my situation now, that's not an issue because we don't have the hard collar. Everyone gets the soft collar as a default if they can't be cleared clinically. Now, for the unconscious patient, I find that even easier because, yeah, they get the soft collar on, but it's not going to cause a skin ulcer. It's not going to cause a pressure sore. It's not going to restrict their, well, I guess it depends on how hard you put it on, how tight you put it on, but it's not going to restrict their blood flow through their neck vessels. It's not going to, you know, we had one case where a hard collar caused a chin ulcer due to its application. It's not going to cause that. But it still reminds people, yes, this person's neck isn't cleared clinically. And my colleague who kind of criticized softly says, well, why don't you just put a sticker on their head, which, you know, which would do the same thing. Well, yeah, you can. And, you know, you could make a joke about it. Yes, you can put a sticker or put a tattoo on their face or whatever, say the C-spine not cleared. But equally, what's wrong with putting a soft collar on? It does the same thing. And actually, I think you can find it on my Twitter feed or I can send you the picture, but these collars do have a red label on the front saying cervical spine not cleared. Not only is the whole collar a visual reminder, there's actually a written note on the front of it saying, hey, this cervical spine's not cleared. So in the scenarios you're given, the 3-1, the conscious patient, the drunk patient, the unconscious patient, that, you know, if there's any suspicion that, or you can't clear them, they all get the soft collar. And all three groups don't have any issue with the soft collar. I tell you, a conscious patient has no problem with the soft collar. And the drunk patient is much better, is much happier with the soft collar than the hard collar. I can guarantee you that. And, you know, you can do the audit or do a, you know, feedback questionnaires from patients, but I can almost guarantee you what the result will be because I've asked them. And certainly, you will recall this from your experience and maybe your current day practice, but I will recall it from my previous practice where how many times do we have patients ask us, can I take the collar off? You know, how many times did they ask us that? And we used to think that was just annoying, but really they're just saying this thing, it hurts. I don't like it. You know, and if someone, you know, if a child told you, well, I don't like this thing, can I take it off? I mean, sometimes we just don't think about things. And I guess that's been my shtick with this whole debate topic issue is that we just, for a long time we just didn't think about it, you know, and now that we're questioning it and now that a spinal specialist service in Queensland actually said, hey, we got it wrong for so many decades, now that we are questioning it or we have questioned it, we've just gotten rid of it, I think the discussion in everyone's minds should be, you know, what are we doing here if we continue to use it? And like I said, I've spoken to two providers over in America who they've made the same conclusion. No, we're getting rid of it. It didn't do any good. What? And I would answer the question to your listeners and to yourself is, why are you still doing it? Is it just because it's what we've always done and the law would crucify us if we didn't do it? If they're the only reasons, then I guess, you know, education, foam ed, doing what's best for your patient, you at least stop and pause and think about that, which is, I guess, the reason why we're talking today. And look, I could say, like I said, the audit's coming. Happy to post it as soon as it's available. And certainly I can say what my experience is working in a state now that is hard collar free zone. It is true that other states are looking at that and they're really looking at our experience to see where they move with that. So we are the only state that is hard collar free zone from an ambulance pre-hospital viewpoint. Like I said, other sporting associations like National Rugby League, Ski Patrol, Life Saving Association on the beaches, they have also changed. But other ambulance services have maintained the hard collar. So, you know, South Australia, Victoria, New South Wales, Western Australia still have the hard collar. But I tell you what, They are looking at what's happening here, and I would predict in the next year or 2 years that it will change. And globally, I think that's where it's headed.
I'd agree with that. I feel like many Americans are, especially with different FOMED ways of getting this information, are realizing that this is not something that needs to stay the way it was. As we've talked about before with ATLS, it's outdated in many ways, and some of it it's starting to catch up on, but it's outdated in many ways. And I think one of them is the hard collar, is that we need to move a little more away with it, or at least some of the criterion ways we've dealt with it before. I feel like a lot of people don't take the time to properly clear a C-spine, and that is part of the issue, whether you use Nexus, Canadian C-spine, or maybe some other rule that's out there. But you need to be smart about these patients, because it's very uncomfortable. I don't know how many people listening to this have been on a backboard themselves before, whether through training or because they were a patient, but being on a backboard is incredibly painful after a certain amount of time. And the C-collar is really not that much different. It's one of the big reasons why when I have a patient who comes in and they are bored, they're on a backboard, I treat them as any other higher acuity patient. I'm going to see them right away, get them off that backboard almost immediately, because that backboard rarely is doing anything of true benefit. It's more about the transportation side. I do the same thing with the hard collar. Someone came in with a hard collar and they're asking to get it off right away, and you can tell they're obviously uncomfortable with it, and I can properly clear their C-spine, I'm done from there. I try to get people off the backboard, out of the C-collar as quickly as possible when it's appropriate. And if they are in a hard collar, I believe that they need to stay in some form of collar. I will try and get them a soft collar as quickly as possible so that they are more comfortable. And it's amazing, once you take the collar off, you clear their C-spine initially, and you say, okay, I just want you to be comfortable, I'll come back and I'll recheck you in 5-10 minutes. You come back in 5-10 minutes, that neck pain that they had only after the collar came on is now fine, and they're back to their normal selves, and it can completely clear their C-spine from there in high confidence, whether or not I got a CT scan first or whatever other imaging. So I think that's one of the big things people who are listening to this need to pay attention to, is that this is becoming a popular trend, and it seems to have good evidence behind it, at least as good evidence as I think you can get with this type of practice, because I think it's going to be hard to have a randomized controlled trial on who gets no collar, who gets a hard collar, who gets a soft collar. If someone does have anything like that out there, that'd be impressive, but I feel like the numbers to do that would be so high just because of how few people actually have cervical injuries and how few people from those would have a difference in outcome based on the immobilization practice.
Yeah, well, look, kudos to you. I mean, I think thoughtful practitioners and people that, you know, kind of try to follow the trends in trauma care, resuscitation, emergency medicine, I think they do see the change in terms of practice and, the questioning of what we've been doing for a long time in a number of areas, but in particular with the C-spine, because it is very practical in terms of what you do on a day-to-day basis in terms of the quality of your care, because, you know, we don't want to hurt patients without good reason. Karim Browey, who's, you know, a well-respected trauma a surgeon, professor of trauma in London, he gave a debate at emergency medicine physician Darren Brody, who's well-regarded in certainly America and across the world in terms of his teachings on airway management and pre-hospital care. So they had a debate about this whole thing. The crowd vote, I guess, the people who were there at the time, they voted for Karim, who was arguing that we should continue to use the hard collar, and Darren was arguing to abandon it, just like what we're talking about now. And I had a bit of a, I guess, followed the interaction on Twitter, which is one of its great benefits. A poll was done at the time, contemporaneously done at the time of this debate. And the interesting poll, and I've saved it because I think it's a good testimony of, the dichotomy in thinking on the whole issue, and I guess the swaying backwards and forwards of fear versus, you know, rationality, is that the poll showed that 80%, you know, 70% of poll voters thought that we should get rid of the hard collar, even though the crowd vote for Karim was to continue it. And I asked him, and he basically just said, look, his argument is, why change something that we've been doing for so long without good evidence? which is it's a reasonable argument to say, is that why not make the strategy to improve this care that we should just clear the C-spine quicker. So we should minimize people's time in the hard collar. Don't get rid of the hard collar, but just minimize the time that people spend in the hard collar. And that is seems to be a perfectly reasonable and logical approach. However, I disagree with it. And look, I just thought I'd present that because, you know, I respect him. He's professor of trauma and he's, you know, he's well regarded in terms of education, not only on SMAC and FOMED, but just, you know, in the medical community. He's published a lot of things and so I respect his opinion about that. But I guess from my experience here in Queensland, I would have to disagree that you don't have to wait for better evidence. You don't have to wait for that randomized trial. And whilst, yes, you can say, look, let's just minimize the hard collar time, I think you and I and most of the listeners know the reality of emergency medicine care in real life and pre-hospital care in real life is that once an intervention is started, trying to say let's minimize how long we keep people for that intervention is really tricky. I think with long transports like we do here in Australia, to try to say, well, yeah, it's a two-hour flight to the spinal area or to the CT scanner, so we're going to put you in the seat collar anyway, but we'll try to minimize the time. That's just, it doesn't work for us here. And yeah, in London or the UK where the transport time might be, what, 20 minutes? Yeah, fair enough. Put the hard collar on. They're not going to be in it for any longer than 30, 40 minutes, hopefully. But even then, I've asked a few people there where they say, well, actually, the trauma patient gets brought in and maybe they're not of a high acuity, but the C-spine's been secured with a hard collar, that they may actually remain in that hard collar for several hours because of just the department's busy and CT is banked up or imaging's not being able to be done or whatever. And then because you've committed to this dogma approach of let's put the collar on because that's the automatic thing to do, but because we can't clear the C-spine, then basically, you know, you may be hurting these patients for longer than they need to be. Even though the principle of trying to minimize the time they're in that collar is a good principle, the reality that I find, certainly in my work in remote Australia, where we have to move people a long way, I think that what we've done here works better for us in that we'd use a C-collar that can be comfortable in that for several hours, and we're not saying the C-spine's been cleared. We're just saying it hasn't been cleared, but we're using the C-collar, soft collar, to remind everyone that it hasn't been cleared, but also as a form of support. I don't think we would ever claim that it's a form of immobilization because it's not. It's a form of neck support. But I thought I'd mention that because, you know, I want to pay respect to Krim in terms of his opinion. And like I said, I have an emergency colleague down in Melbourne that I have had much more animated debates than this about the whole issue. You know, he actually worked for the spinal service in Melbourne for a year or so, and he actually wrote a paper which I'm not sure if he ever got published yet. I think he was trying to publish it, but basically it was an evidence-based review of the entire history of literature on spinal immobilization, and his conclusion was that we shouldn't, you know, similar to Karim's, we shouldn't just throw out the hard collar without any more research or evidence being done. But I find that a little bit, hypocritical, I guess, in terms of, well, maybe hypocritical is a bit unfair, a little bit odd in terms of saying that the hard collar was introduced with absolutely no evidence at all. It was just basically a good idea that was done back in the 1970s. Because if you talk to paramedics who've lived long enough, they remember the time before the hard collar, and it'd be interesting if you actually interviewed a paramedic who's actually seen, you know, the introduction of the hard collar. Because most of us, I imagine, we've only ever lived and worked in an era where the hard collar is the default approach. But there are actually paramedics out there and doctors out there who do remember a time before the hard collar, back in the early 70s, and remember the introduction of the hard collar. And then they actually quite, with a bit of a wry smile on their face, they often kind of say to me, it is quite odd that we see how things move in circles in medicine, in that we saw it come in, we've seen it used almost as 100% exclusive, and now we see this debate, you know, organisations like ILCOR, like Australian Resus Council, like the National Rugby League, you know, all actually now changing their mind, basically because we brought this thing in with really no good proof that it would do anything. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how things will develop over the course of this year, but I predict that by the end of this decade, there'll be no hard collars.
Strong prediction, but I think very reasonable. Your soft collar, or just in general, C-collar comment about, you know, not being there, then getting introduced with really no real evidence, just a good idea, and then now we're getting evidence and now we're moving away from it, kind of reminds me of some of the things with one of your favorite things, ketamine. You know, just kind of, it was really popular at first, then it sort of fell off. I think one of the big things was the concern for increased ICP and increased blood pressures and all those types of things, which have since been pretty much debunked. But I think it calls into one of the big things with medicine is sometimes we just bring things up because it sounds like a good idea. But really, when it's the practice comes around and we start actually doing the evidence because we want to see if it really was effective, we start moving away from it again. I feel like C-collars is going to be one of those things that it still does have a benefit, most likely. You know, at least as you said, if nothing else, it kind of serves as a reminder for patients and providers about when we had to be more cautious with the C-spine, and it may provide some protection. But again, I think there's going to have to be a different type of study out there to see what it really does. But in the end, I think it's all good stuff about how C-collars is going to be one of those things I'm hoping, like you said, will change over the next couple of years. And hopefully by the end of this decade, you will see a difference in C-collars now compared to what it was even just a couple of years ago. I feel like we're using C-collars less and less. You know, good rollout criteria, I think, has been a huge part of this as well. All right, and that was Min Le Cong. Again, really thankful that he could come back on the show again. Hopefully we can maybe talk to him some more again in the future, just because he does such an amazing job really summarizing points and bringing things home. If you do not already follow him on Twitter, I'd highly encourage it. Also, he has a couple of different FOMED sites. We'll put that on the blog post as well. Min, will you please do us the favor and say our tagline for us?
Absolutely. So folks, until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.